Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and thank you for joining us. This past weekend saw many people spending one of the last few weekends of good weather outside, and yes, wasn't it glorious? While others looked ahead, stocking up provisions for the winter season. And when I speak of provisions for winter, I'm not talking about squash and potatoes. I'm talking about those wonder sandwiches, two cardboard slabs on top and bottom, and food for the brain in the pages in between. Used books were to be had in abundance at two major book sales this weekend, and both of these are still news because these sales are still going on today, Monday. One of them is here at the Ames Public Library to support their Friends Foundation, and the other is down at the Des Moines Fairgrounds supporting Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. This book sale, the latter book sale, provides a convenient pretext for my interview with Susanna DeBaca, Story County resident and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, about the intense scrutiny her organization has been facing in recent months. And toward the end of the hour, we'll be joined in the studio by Leanne Harter, spokesperson for Story County. But here, now in the studio, is Sarah Bolke, volunteer coordinator for Ames Public Library, where today is the final deep discount day of the book sale, starting at 9 a.m., just a block away from our station here. Welcome, Sarah.
Good morning.
So we don't want to keep you too long because we know you have to run next door
right.
and get your volunteers all in a row. But let's talk about these book sale fundraisers that are held twice a year at the library. About how many volunteers are part of an effort like this?
Oh, it's a year-round effort. For the sale itself, we have about 100 volunteers that pull off the five, six days that it takes to create the whole sale. So,
100, wow.
Mm-hmm, about that.
And it's probably an interesting job as a volunteer. Besides watching the books that go by, you can also watch some of the customers who, there might be some regular customers at these sales.
Absolutely. We see the same faces a lot. We had a lot from out of town, a couple people from out of state, actually, on the Friday night of the sale. But, yeah, we have our regulars and have a close relationship with those, too.
And what are those regulars up to, do you think?
Well, it depends. Some are specifically collecting a particular subject of books. Photography, for example. Quilting is a big book sale item this year. We have regular families that come in that stock their home libraries, so we know some things that they're particularly looking for, too.
Yeah, and I know some homeschool families like to get books for their...
Mm-hmm. Daycares as well.
Yep. Uh-huh. And then sometimes it seems that the same books that were on sale at the last sale reappear for the next one.
They end up being re-donated. I think people believe that if they enjoyed the book, then somebody else is going to be wanting the book as well. So we'll see them return, yep.
And... there may be a few folks. So some of the other purposes that people would buy the books for... I know of people who donate books to prison book programs, and mm-hmm. They can find cheap books, but on the right topic for those people, and little free libraries too. I know some stewards of little free libraries who will go to these book sales and stock up on the type of books that their clientele want.
We'll especially see people with little free libraries today. Today, all the books are free for a small admission. Everybody can come in and take as much as they want, and so we do see a lot of people in the neighborhoods that have the little free libraries. There's lots of other things that people are getting them for. We're establishing a relationship with an organization that supplies prison visitor rooms with children's books, so every child that comes to visit a family member can go home with a book, for example. We've worked with organizations that select books to send overseas to create libraries. The last one was a couple of years ago for a library in Belize. So there's lots of other larger projects that people have when they're coming in. They're not just looking for leisure reading. They actually have a bigger purpose.
And I heard you talking the other day about some teens who are repurposing their books, the books that they buy, into artwork.
We actually have that happen quite a bit. We had, at our last sale, we had an ISU student who's an artist who had hoped to get as many VHS tapes as possible because he had an art project that it was an installation project that he was doing. The teens actually repurpose some of the books. They make them into purses. Or they fan them out and actually sculpt them into another object. So it's pretty amazing what people can do with books.
Wow. How does that purses work? What do they do exactly?
They actually do take out the main part of the pages of the book. They're going to look for something that's really attractive on the outside, and then they'll hinge them and put clasps on them and handles and things like that. So a really neat book on the outside is what they're particularly looking for.
Okay. So can I ask about how much money the average book sale brings in?
It's varied the last few years just because we were in a temporary location, which was not as conducive to our shoppers. So our proceeds did suffer a little bit, but we didn't want to give up the sales. It's just too fun of a community event to give up for the years we were dislocated just because of our building project. Typically, though, we anticipate making about $10,000 for each sale. And that's on top of what we sell on a daily basis, of course, in our bookstore. So
the Literary Grounds.
Literary Grounds, right. So we're raising about $2,200 in the bookstore each month. So our book sales, beyond the two large ones per year, actually it's just a much bigger endeavor than I think people realize.
Mm. And all of the proceeds go to the library's Friends Foundation,
right,
which is separate from the regular library governance and the budget set by the city and by the library's board of directors.
Correct.
So can you give us an example of what the Friends Foundation does with these funds?
The book sales are just one of a variety of fundraisers that the Friends Foundation sponsor every year. So they support a wide variety of things at the libraries, services, materials, programs. They support Bookends at the Bandshell, which is every year, all summer. So the music concert at the Bandshell Park here in Ames. They support all the artists that come in for that. They buy prize books for our summer reading programs for children. So every child goes home after reading a certain, challenging themselves to read a certain amount, they get prize books. They have purchased materials for the library. They supplement our book budget. So the Friends Foundation actually has their hands in just about everything that the library is doing.
That's a really great resource.
Yeah.
And you know, besides the money and how that's contributing to the library's mission, it seems that the book sale itself contributes to the library's mission of promoting literacy in our community and so forth.
Right. You know, the sales committee that organizes the book sales, you know, certainly raising money is a big goal for us, but it's not our only goal. One of our main goals is to get reasonably priced books into our own community. We could probably sell more books online if we wanted to, probably increase the bottom line, the fundraising that we do, but we've actively chosen not to do that. We really want to enrich our community itself through the book sales. Like I said, today a lot of the books they'll be free, so that's a way to get them back into our community. The other thing that is a major goal for the committee is to create a good community event. It's not just about selling the books, but if you've ever been to the book sales, it's very fun. You know, it's neat to see the families coming in, getting to talk to the people about what they're looking for, helping them locate the items that they're hoping to find, seeing the joy in people's faces when they find that treasure. It's just a lot of fun to be a part of. So even if you're just looking for one particular book or just want to browse for one book, it's well worth the visit, I think.
Yeah. Your husband showed me a treasure that he picked up at the book sale this year.
What was that? He brought home several.
He showed me the really nice dictionary.
Oh, yeah. He's been actually looking for a dictionary that he has a beautiful dictionary stand that he's been wanting to complete his project.
Yeah,
so
it's a handsome old volume.
Yeah, it's huge and heavy.
It'll hold that thing down.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Sarah, for coming in. I know these book sales are a lot of work for you.
They are, but they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Today especially will be a big day for us. So.
Yep. Okay. So Sarah Bulkey, Volunteer Coordinator, Ames Public Library. Next up, the straight dope on one of this season's hottest controversies from an executive of Planned Parenthood who lives right here in Story County.
Someone's got says they cut it out quick, but when they will, I can only guess. They say I shot a man named Gray and took his wife to Italy. She inherited $1 million, and when she died, it came to me. I can't help it if I'm lucky. People see me all the time, and they just can't remember how to act. Their minds are filled with big ideas, images, and distorted facts. Even you, yesterday, you had to ask me where it was at. I couldn't believe after all these years, you didn't know me any better than that.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. And you know, that line always gets to me. This woman had inherited $1 million, and when she died, they went to the song's narrator. I always prefer to imagine her and the narrator inheriting $1 million, something like the hundreds of thousands of used books that were available in central Iowa this past weekend, in Ames at the Ames Public Library and at the Des Moines Fairgrounds, where Planned Parenthood of the Heartland is having its 55th annual book sale. This weekend, I had the pleasure of meeting Susanna DeBaca, a Story County resident and the CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. This organization serves four states, Iowa, Nebraska, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, if you can picture that. Missouri is somewhere missing in the middle. We certainly talked about the stories planted in the press about Planned Parenthood, but I started off the conversation by asking her what it is like to run an organization that serves southern states like Oklahoma and Arkansas together with more progressive states like our own.
First and foremost, the need for Planned Parenthood services is great in every single one of our states. And the laws and the healthcare systems and the insurance and the demographics are different in every single state. So we look at each location slightly differently. I would say that our southern states are definitely more conservative. That's impacted legislation around what we can do. However, the need is greatest in those states. Arkansas and Oklahoma rank among the highest in teen pregnancy rates, among the highest in rates of sexually transmitted diseases and HIV. And so we know that the people in those states need us, and that helps us to prevail, to make sure that they get the access they need to reproductive and sexual health care services.
That's right. And the book sale is funding education in particular. Is that right?
The book sale proceeds go specifically to education and outreach. So you're absolutely correct. And we do education services differently in different states. Iowa, we are very lucky because we have state-mandated sex ed. And so our schools are required to provide medically accurate sexual education that's age-appropriate. And Planned Parenthood sometimes provides that curriculum or trains the people who do that, as well as providing education in other forums. Those types of education, I think, have contributed to Iowa's lower than national average teen pregnancy rates, which is a great thing.
And compare the number of health centers that you are able to operate in these different states. Are there more in Iowa, for instance?
Yes, we operate 18 health centers across this four-state region. Iowa has the greatest number of health centers. We have 13 centers here, and some of them are quite small and in rural or medically underserved areas. In Nebraska, we have two large centers in Omaha and Lincoln. We have one large center in Tulsa. Another affiliate runs all of western Oklahoma. And in Arkansas, we have two centers, one in Fayetteville and one in Little Rock, which is the capital.
So we're lucky, I should say.
I would say in Iowa, the real benefit of having so many Planned Parenthood centers is that we do provide care in these rural or medically underserved areas where there's a shortage of healthcare providers, specifically a shortage of providers who have expertise in this particular area. So we feel that we serve a great need, and our patients tell us that they appreciate that.
Can you give us a sense of how many patients you do see a year?
Mm-hmm. Across the heartland, we see over 60,000 unduplicated patients, many of whom come in from multiple services in a year. And in Iowa, it's about 38,000, so a fairly large number of individuals who we are serving just within Iowa for a very broad range of services.
That's more than 1% of our population. So one of these Planned Parenthood's health centers is located here in Ames. Can you tell us a bit about that institution?
We've had a presence in Ames since the 70s, and the center long ago used to be located on Lincoln Way, kind of behind the Target. I went there myself as a young woman. Today, our center is near Campus Town. We provide a very wide variety of services, and despite the fact we're near Campus Town, we're serving men, women, and families from all across Ames of many ages, and even people who are in the rural areas outside the Ames area.
And what types of services do these patients typically require or request?
The most commonly requested service in Ames, as in almost every single location we have, is contraceptive services. So that's people coming in for birth control of one form or another. There's also a very large number of patients who come in looking for testing for sexually transmitted diseases, wondering if they're carrying something and what they need to do. So we'll also treat that. We do pregnancy testing. We do breast cancer screening. We do HIV testing. So very wide variety of those sort of preventative care services. And we also offer medication abortion services at our Ames location.
Can you explain what that is, medication abortion?
Medication abortions are available to women up to 12 weeks. So it's really for an earlier stage of a pregnancy. And it's a very, very safe procedure. A woman seeking to terminate her pregnancy takes a regimen of pills versus a surgical abortion. And that procedure, as well as the broader abortion services that we offer, make up less than 3% of the services in Ames or across the entire Heartland.
Does Planned Parenthood of the Heartland also provide surgical abortions at other health centers?
We do. We provide surgical abortions in four locations across the Heartland, in Des Moines, Iowa City, Omaha, and Lincoln.
When you provide abortion services, what is that process like for the client?
Certainly. When a patient comes in who is pregnant and trying to decide what to do, we really present every option available. So we'll talk about parenting, about what that might look like. If that's something that a person wants to do to continue the pregnancy, we'll provide her with information about resources available for her. We also, and this is something a lot of people don't know, have an adoption agency as part of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. So if a woman wishes to carry the pregnancy to term and to put the child up for adoption, we can facilitate that. And if she is sure that terminating her pregnancy is the right thing, we spend a great deal of time talking to her about that, explaining what the process is going to be like, confirming that it's right for her at this time, and then we would offer those services as appropriate. And if a woman is uncertain, in many instances, we won't actually offer abortion services to her. We'll send her home. We've had people come in where in the interview, because we do it only with the woman, we've learned that maybe her partner is pressuring her. In some cases, parents pressuring a young woman. And in those instances, we say, no, you know, you need to go look at other alternatives. We believe very deeply that a decision to be a parent or when to be a parent belongs with that woman. Planned Parenthood doesn't have an opinion. We're here to provide counseling and to provide the appropriate services or to steer the woman to the services that she needs.
In other words, you're not pro-abortion.
No, not at all. We provide abortion services where it's appropriate because abortion is safe and legal, but we want to make sure that the woman arrives at the decision that is right for her at that time in her life.
I want to get back to just one thing that you said. You mentioned that you actually yourself went to the clinic when it was located on Lincoln Way. Do you want to say more about why you were in Ames and why you went?
Well, when I was a student at Iowa State University, I was looking for birth control, and a really good friend of mine, her mother, was on the Planned Parenthood board, so spoke pretty openly about the services there, so I was very fortunate to learn about Planned Parenthood. I didn't have, like many students, much of an ability to pay, and I also learned that Planned Parenthood had sliding scale fees, as we still do. And so I went to Planned Parenthood back in the 80s for my birth control and my annual exams. And they were just fantastic. The compassionate, non-judgmental care that the center staff provided, I remember being very grateful for at the time. One of the things I wanted was confidentiality and anonymity, and they provided that, as we still do. What we hear that's interesting is, you know, we have a lot of students who come to Planned Parenthood today, and individuals ask us, well, why don't they go to the health center on campus? Well, the reality of the situation is a lot of young people do want confidentiality and anonymity. If they're on their parents' insurance, they may not want their parents to know they're getting tested for a sexually transmitted infection. And we certainly respect those wishes and provide an alternative to health services, though obviously that's a fantastic place to go as well.
Well, I'll say also that I went to a Planned Parenthood clinic when I was a graduate student in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and I experienced the same kind of care. And I have to say, though, I feel like I took it for granted. It was the 80s or late 80s, early 90s, and I didn't realize maybe that struggle that had gone before to create such an institution.
Well, one of the benefits of my job is I get to hear a lot of those stories, and I'm reminded of the history, really, of sort of reproductive rights. Many people don't realize that 100 years ago, even providing information about birth control was illegal. And it wasn't until 1965, with a case called Griswold versus Connecticut, that birth control was legal for married couples. This just blows young women's minds when they hear this. They just can't believe that it's true. So we've made a lot of progress in having laws that give us the ability to choose when and if we want to become parents. That enables us to make other good decisions in our lives and to pursue some of the things that we want to. People forget that prior to having that ability, many women died in childbirth. Many women had children so frequently that it was very difficult for them to pursue some of their dreams. So just having birth control has been an enormous shift for women. And so I think, like you, being able to go in college, maybe when you didn't even have the ability to pay, but to have access to contraception, probably enabled you to do a lot of things that you wanted to in your life. That's why we continue to do what we do in terms of providing education and access so that people can live the life that they want to.
Okay, we're talking with Susanna DeBacca, CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, here on Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And there's a lot of controversy about the federal funding of Planned Parenthood. There's a federal law that states that the federal government cannot fund abortion. And so the critics say that, well, they might not be funding the abortion services of Planned Parenthood, but they are funding these other services, and it's all kind of a shell game or a slush fund, and so ultimately the taxpayer is funding abortion. Could you address that perception?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background first. No federal funding goes for abortion services except in very rare cases of rape or incest. In 1976, there was a law called the Hyde Amendment passed that prohibited any federal funding. So it just has not happened, and any idea that it is happening is untrue. And in Iowa, if there are those rare cases of rape or incest, Governor Branstad himself actually would have to sign off on that. That really just doesn't occur hardly at all. But in terms of, you know, can we take the federal funding that goes for family planning and then somehow use it for abortion services? I think anyone who runs an organization, a nonprofit or otherwise, knows that we have to account for how we spend money in our books. We are audited as a 501c3, so our books are open to anyone. But we use the funding that we receive from either federal or state grants for the appropriate use, and we actually have to report back to the state or at a federal level to make sure that we're actually using those grants carefully. So an audit and a contract review process already happens. Now, very recently, Governor Branstad did look into our contracts in Iowa to make sure that we were using them for the purposes intended. And he found and has reiterated now on multiple occasions that, yes, we're using the funding for the purposes it was intended for. There is absolutely no wrongdoing, and we've been incredibly compliant. So I think Iowans should feel very confident that where we receive that federal or state money, and that's really for mostly family planning and education services, that money is going towards those services.
So a couple of months ago, this video came out and went viral, showing a situation of people in a room discussing the sale of body parts of fetuses. This led to an enormous focus and discussion in Congress about the funding of Planned Parenthood. Can you provide us just some of the timeline of this controversy and bring us up to the very present? Where do we stand now with this controversy concerning the video?
Certainly. So on July 14th, a video was released to the public that had been created by a group that calls themselves the Center for Medical Progress. And we now know, of course, that that was an organization that misrepresented who they are, falsified their driver's licenses, falsified websites, falsified business cards. They were posing as a tissue procurement company, and they really waged a 3-year sting operation, a smear campaign against Planned Parenthood as well as other abortion providers. And what they did on these videos was set up meetings with Planned Parenthood medical staff or executives posing as the company that would help them with research using fetal tissue. So essentially what can happen is after an abortion procedure, if a patient wishes to donate that tissue, some Planned Parenthoods participate in this research. It goes to legitimate, credible research institutions where they use it for scientific research for diseases like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, where they're looking for cures. This only happens at a handful, less than 1% of Planned Parenthood affiliates. And the exchange of money that happens in this situation is for these tissue procurement companies to actually take the specimens from the clinic and then deliver them essentially to the research institution. But these videos were heavily edited, spliced multiple times, and then reassembled in a way, you know, designed to make it appear that Planned Parenthood was engaging in wrongdoing, where no wrongdoing occurred at all. And in fact, we were participating in very legal research. So the videos mischaracterized what this handful of Planned Parenthoods were doing, essentially in an attempt to discredit the work that we were doing. So what happened after that was essentially just a media frenzy where the public was presented with clips of these videos and wondering what was going on here. That led to a lot of political discussions, and ultimately, and this is still in a 12-week period of time, many anti-abortion legislators or lawmakers demanding investigations into Planned Parenthoods. So in states where this has occurred, and even some where it doesn't occur, there have been investigations, and to date, every single investigation has resulted in no evidence of wrongdoing. We just keep proving that Planned Parenthood has done nothing illegal. But Planned Parenthood of the Heartland has never participated in this tissue donation. We've never done it, though I think we can all agree that life-saving research is a good thing.
Right. Okay, so bring us up to the present on the federal level in Congress. What has taken place in the last weeks?
So soon after those videos dropped, there was a bill introduced, in fact, by Joni Ernst of Iowa, Senator Ernst, calling for defunding of Planned Parenthood. And in early August, that went to the Senate, and they defeated it immediately. Then, in September, the House actually passed a vote calling for Planned Parenthood defunding. That went to the Senate about a week later, and that vote was blocked. However, Planned Parenthood has been a big topic of discussion around a potential government shutdown. That was narrowly averted about a week ago. And at this point, there is no defunding that we believe will happen, at least in the near future. But in December, there will be more discussions about, the government funding and shutdown. So that's kind of where we are now. It's been a busy 12 weeks.
Right. And how has that affected you and your staff?
Well, from the health center standpoint, first and foremost, I want everyone to know that we have just continued our business uninterrupted. We are here to serve our patients. Our patients keep coming. And so we've made sure that our doors are open and nothing is a problem there. Our staff has spent a great deal of time responding to our public supporters, our staff, our board, all of the people who are asking questions, trying to let them know what is happening, keep them abreast of these issues. We've organized counter protests where we've seen protesting at some of our health centers. But what's been amazing is the outpouring of support from people across our four-state region. We've had people writing letters to the editor, op-eds, calling us, visiting our centers, bringing cookies to our staff, and we've had more fundraising support because of really the outrage of our supporters over these things. So I have been inspired by how many people care about Planned Parenthood, do not want for us to be defunded, and who stand with Planned Parenthood.
Well, I'm sure they recognize that your services are, in many cases, life-saving.
We receive stories on an almost daily basis from men, women, and families, from people who tell us, Planned Parenthood, you were there for me when? And their stories are all different. Their stories are all unique. It might be like you and me, that when you were in college, you just needed birth control so that you could get on with your studies. We hear stories about how people had cervical cancer detected because they came to Planned Parenthood, where we found a lump in their breast, and ultimately we provided some life-saving services. People who came in for HIV tests where they were terrified, to go someplace else. And of course, abortion stories that we hear from people who, for whatever reason, feel like the compassionate care we provided them was exactly what they needed at that time in their life. So it is very heartening to know how much Planned Parenthood means to people. And I think we see that in the national polling. Just last week, there was a Wall Street Journal poll that showed the overwhelming majority of Americans, 61%, support Planned Parenthood, oppose defunding, and really want for us to continue providing the services that we do.
And just to remind people how many are here in Iowa? 13?
13 centers, and we provide services to 38,000 women, men, and families across these communities here in Iowa.
Well, the book sale will still be going on Monday when this show airs. What happens on Monday at the sale?
So Monday, you can come in and just walk in, and it's free. We have, hundreds of thousands of books, records, puzzles, you name it, all sorts of items that then get marked down even more on Monday. So you can probably walk out with a huge tote bag for almost nothing. But the proceeds of this sale benefit Planned Parenthood's education services. You know, we have fantastic supporters, some of who literally have volunteered for 55 years. We met one of those yesterday, and it just shows how much people care about the work that we do.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Susanna DeBaca, CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, and a former Ames resident.
Yes, thanks for having me on your show.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson. With me in the studio is Leanne Harter, spokesperson for Story County and its multitude of functions. She's going to help us get up to date on all aspects of the governance of our county. Welcome to the show, Leanne.
Good morning.
So when we last had you on, we were talking a lot about a survey that that Story County had put out to residents. What has become of that survey?
That is part of our Cornerstone Capstone project, or I'm going to just call it the C2C project.
C2C.
C2C. It's a lot easier to say.
Sea to Shining Sea.
Yeah. C2C is the county's effort to develop a comprehensive long-range plan. And as you mentioned, a survey we had out there for the general public to take, a quite lengthy survey.
Yes, some people complained about the length.
Yeah, it was about 10 pages, and we appreciate everyone that went and took the survey. We had a little under 800 responses, which is phenomenal. We are now at the phase of the whole C2C project that we're taking the comments through the survey, through the youth survey we released to the youth in Story County, through the school districts, and the SWOT analysis, so strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, that were done in the public meetings.
SWOT.
At the same time that the surveys were out, taking all the information, and our consultants are now putting plans together.
Okay.
And the plans are available on the website, which is c2cplan.com.
Wait, they've already put this all together into a plan?
It's in a draft format.
Okay.
We have draft chapters for land use, economic prosperity, transportation, natural resources. And I must stress again, it's draft because we're actually getting ready. We did last Friday release the Iowa State University survey for the students and faculty at the Iowa State community.
Release it in terms of giving it to the students and the faculty, or
it's online. It's online. We have a press release that will go out today, so people are aware it's out there.
And how long before that survey is closed?
I think we're going to leave that open probably through the end of the calendar year.
Okay.
But we haven't, on the level of our project team, we haven't discussed that. But some common themes that have come out of all the surveys, what we've done
the
thus
800
far.
That
the 800 plus, we had, I think it was 150 student surveys,
okay,
which is great. Quality of life is very much appreciated in Story County, irregardless of what school district or what community you live in. We all identify ourselves as Story County residents, and we all really relish the quality of life we have here. And that means that we need to build on that. And that's where
the strength,
going back to that SWOT analysis, build on the quality of life, put plans in place that preserve our agricultural heritage and provide for agricultural protection, and then balance that with the need to provide more opportunities for recreational uses, conservation of our lands. We have a very, very strong Story County conservation program. And definitely throughout all the surveys and public input we've received thus far, everyone relishes that, but they want to build on that. It's been there for over 50 years, and they want to see it continue to grow.
So we have preserving agricultural heritage and maintaining the conservation
right.
quality. So those are things that can sometimes compete.
They can compete,
but perhaps the people over there at Story County will figure out how to make it work together.
That's a challenge, and then you build in how we define future land uses, and then also identify the strategies we put in place to continue our economic prosperity. So it definitely, our consultants that we've hired are doing an amazing job at balancing and bringing this all together. We'll release the chapters one by one in November, and then they're on the website right now, but just to kind of drill down in each chapter. And then in January, we'll start another round of public open houses.
Okay, and say a little bit more about land use and development. That's always an issue in the county. You have these areas that are parts of incorporated towns, and then you have the unincorporated areas.
Great question. Through the public input we've received thus far, whether the surveys or the open houses or people just attending different meetings of our task force, first and foremost, development, if it occurs, the desire has been that occur, if it's really dense development, occur inside city limits.
Right.
That city limits or close proximity to city limits is the most appropriate place for that level of development to occur. That being said, it's also been recognized through our public input that there are types of development that are perhaps more appropriate in unincorporated Story County agricultural businesses. There's a market demand in some cases for some rural residential housing. Then we need to go back and go to that balancing approach that we talked about at the very beginning, and how do we make sure that we're protecting agricultural resources, protecting our conservation resources, which are limited and scarce, and then provide for that market. So that's what the chapters will try to do, and set a blueprint that then the Board of Supervisors can use to make those land use decisions in the future.
Well, that's I'm sure it's always nice to have a blueprint when you're going into anything.
It is. And we've always had we have over 50 years of history in doing land use planning in Story County. We're ramping it up. We're taking it to next level, and we're looking at it from a more comprehensive viewpoint, looking at economic development, transportation, the whole package. And I think the end product next June is going to be, again, a great blueprint to go forward.
Okay, and I understand that the Board of Supervisors is also producing a sort of blueprint for themselves right now.
Yeah, the board in August did approve their second strategic plan. 2 years ago, we brought in a consultant to help develop that first ever strategic plan. We've now gone back and we accomplished those goals to the best of our ability, and we've set six more priority areas.
Okay, six priorities for the Board of Supervisors. What are they?
Employee compensation and benefits, parks and trails, community resiliency, water quality, infrastructure, and public safety. And within those six large categories, there are very detailed strategies. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the community resiliency.
I was going to ask you about that. What could that mean?
Story County, just like other jurisdictions in Story County, throughout the nation, needs to look ahead and see if something happens to our facilities.
Oh.
We have a natural event. We have not something along the lines of South Carolina, but if that were to happen, how do we continue to provide the services that our citizens of Story County need on a day-to-day basis?
Okay.
Let's take, for example, the admin building in Story County in Nevada is not able to be functioning. Where do people go to vote? Where do employees' checks get cut? Where do people need to get their plates for their vehicles? If that building's not there, what happens? And so the fund name is COOP-COG, the acronym. It's continuity of planning.
You can sure get caught up in that, huh?
Yeah, continuity of planning, continuity of government.
Okay.
And that's what community resiliency is. We're working on that COOP-COG plan right now as a county, and then training and making sure that we're able to provide those day-to-day functions if that were ever to occur.
Okay. And other items on that list include?
It's
parks and trails. I like that.
It's parks and trails, and it's going back then to that cornerstone to capstone. In fact, the C2C plan is actually mentioned in the strategic plan. the strategic plan recognizes that once C2C is done and adopted, there's next steps that have to occur. Yeah. So it is a continuum of planning and looking forward. And
yeah, it's all very abstract, but it could mean things like, you know, is this bridge going to just stay closed versus...
Exactly.
Okay. Anything else to say about the Board of Supervisors strategic plan?
It's 3 fiscal years. And so for the non-government employees, we operate a July 1st through June 30th is our year, our fiscal year. So it actually will be running then till the end of three years from this coming July.
Okay. So transportation is an issue in Story County for many people. We have some good transportation within Ames, but once you get out of Ames and need to get to the Nevada courthouse, it's a little more difficult. And that east-west corridor, I hear, is something that is going to be under discussion by the Iowa DOT.
And it very well could be changing. And through the C2C project, we're really trying to keep, Story County is trying to keep an eye on what's occurring with the DOT's decisions. But I want to put out for those listening that there is an important public hearing being hosted by the Iowa Department of Transportation on Thursday, October 15th. So it's this Thursday.
This Thursday.
From 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Crossroad Baptist Church. That is the church that's it's not Cornerstone, the big one at the corner of I-35 and Highway 30. It's the one just immediately east.
Okay.
There's 2 churches there.
So it's on that corridor.
It's
on
right
30.
On the corridor, exactly. This meeting being hosted by the DOT is to discuss what happens, as you just said, between Ames and Nevada along Highway 30, that corridor. And there's discussions underway to remove a lot of the at-grade intersections and realign roadways within that stretch between Ames and Nevada. It's an opportunity, as the DOT has said in the press release, to have a public presentation and then question and answers. Mm-hmm. Sessions.
So at grade intersections are those ones where they've created like an extra left-hand turn lane and you just make your turn when the oncoming traffic is slow.
Yeah, that's what could be. It could be others that there's no turn lanes and you just, you know, close your eyes and go, which that may exist too. The idea is that it would function more in a better format if those at-grade intersections are removed so that...
That's the premise of the Iowa DOT, that we should have another exit, maybe like 19th Street in Nevada, that where you have to go up and around and under or something like that, instead of just at-grade.
Yeah.
Less casual turning off of
30,
Highway
yeah.
30. Yeah.
So again, it's not a public hearing being held by Story County, but Story County is, we're very...
Impacted,
exactly. And there are a lot of residents either that live along that corridor or use it daily to get to the co-op or farmers that would be impacted if they live south of 30 going north to a co-op. So we want to make sure they're aware of this opportunity to be involved and how the voice is heard with the DOT.
How much of a done deal do you think this is on the Iowa DOT side? Have they made their minds up?
I do know that there are some improvements that are in their advanced planning stages, but beyond that, I think they're in they're receiving public input.
Okay. You never know what that means, unfortunately. Okay, so that meeting is this Thursday at what time?
5 to 6:30 p.m.
5 to 6:30 at
the Crossroad Baptist Church.
Okay, great. Next.
Great opportunity for those members of your listening audience that want to be involved in Story County government but really don't want to run for office, or maybe they just retired and want to keep themselves busy or try and get their foot in the door with a new position. Several boards and commissions have vacancies. We have the Planning and Zoning Commission, Board of Adjustment, Board of Health, the Condemnation Commission, and the Conservation Board. So applications are available on Story County's website at www.storycountyiowa.gov, and they're due by 5 p.m. on December 16th.
Okay, and there are descriptions of each of those.
Yeah, if you go to our website and go to your government and then under boards and commissions.
Okay,
let's
repeat the openings here. It's planning and zoning. That's a big one. Board of Adjustment, what is that?
Board of Adjustment is a quasi-judicial board made up of 5 members, so their decisions are only appealable to district court. They are the board that's appointed by the Board of Supervisors to take action on variances and conditional use permits. Their decisions don't go through the Board of Supervisors, whereas the Planning and Zoning Commission is a recommending body to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, so you're saying the Board of Adjustment has a lot of power.
They do.
Okay.
They do.
And then the Conservation Board, of course.
Is Story County Conservation Board. They are in charge of all the county-owned lands and the parks and trail system and the staff and the education programming.
Okay. And there's a Veterans Affairs department at Story County.
There is. And it's run by a Veterans Affairs Commission as well. I just want to take an opportunity to share with everyone that the Supermarket of VA Benefits is coming up on November 13th. So if you are a veteran or a spouse or child of a veteran and want to be aware of the benefits that are available, this is a great opportunity that's done annually. Moose Lodge on 190th. North of Nate Ames from 8:30 to 5 p.m. And Brett McLean, our Director of Veterans Affairs, will be there and have the wealth of opportunities that are available. And you can meet one-on-one with people. And really, it's a great annual event that a lot of participants attend and derive a lot of benefit from. I do want to quickly mention November 3rd is a city election that's upcoming. Absentee voting is now available through the Story County Auditor's Office. So you can go to 900 6th Street in Nevada. Office hours are 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. You can vote early. Can't vote often, but you can vote early. Also, the Auditor's Office still need election officials for that upcoming city election. So again, contact the Story County Auditor's Office and remember to vote on November 3rd.
Okay, and you say it's a city election. I know that there's an election coming up in Ames for city council. Are there elections in other cities in Story County?
There are, and I think every community has city elections this year. Residents of Sheldahl, you'd need to contact the Polk County Auditor for information, though, because Sheldahl's in Polk, Boone, and Story County, but Polk controls for the voting.
Okay, Sheldahl's a wild hare there.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question. If you live in an unincorporated area, but your mailing address has, you know, say Nevada as its site, are you eligible to vote in city elections or not?
No, your only time you're going to be eligible to vote for your elected officials in that case is going to be the Board of Supervisors or, of course, school district elections if you're talking about local government.
Okay.
That's a good question.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Leanne Harder. Yeah. We'll see you again next month.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay. Leanne Harder, a Story County spokesperson. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We started out the hour with an update from Sarah Bolke on this past weekend's used book sale at the Ames Public Library, where Sarah is volunteer coordinator. That book sale is still going on today, Monday, as is the book sale at the Des Moines Fairgrounds, benefiting Planned Parenthood. We heard from Susanna DeBaca, the CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, about the attacks the organization has faced recently and the resounding support it has received and clean record it has demonstrated in response. Finally, we spoke with Leanne Harder about what's going on in Story County. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. Our engineers were Jonah DeGeest and engineer in training, Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Idiot Wind from Bob Dylan's classic Blood on the Tracks, and I believe it is going to be a very windy day here in central Iowa. If you liked the show, tell your friends. You can find this local talk show and all past local talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. There you can download or share the audio and see links relevant to today's content. Thanks to webmaster Ron Carson for making that possible. You can also like us on Facebook and stay informed about all the programming on KHOI in your news feed. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878 or through our website, khoyfm.org. Or come down to the studio at 410 Douglas Avenue in Ames. As always, your role as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.